We Told You So, part umpteenth, next on Principles and Policies. Welcome to today's edition of Principles and Policies. I'm your host, Barry Sheets, the Executive Director of the Institute for Principled Policy. And along with me today is our co-host, the Vice Chairman of the Institute, my fellow analyst and very good friend, Chuck Michaels.
It's good to be back together in the studio. Of course, we ran last week. In the first part of this week, we ran some audio that we had from our Semper Reformanda conference. And this week, we're glad to be back in the studio doing recordings.
Exactly. Well, Chuck, this one is providential because we're recording today for today. And it just so happens that there is something that's coming today from our friends at the White House, which I think is going to pique the interest of quite a few of our listeners, especially those in the Appalachian areas of our state and of our surrounding states, including our friends in West Virginia, Pennsylvania, Kentucky, you name it. I think they're going to be paying quite a bit of attention to what's happening today. And what that is, Charles, is a major speech that President Barack Obama is going to be giving at Georgetown University. Well, if you think about it, Chuck, we're almost in July. This isn't a commencement address. This is just rolling out a new policy and wanting to have the background of a institute of higher learning behind it so that it makes it seem like it's more academically solid than what it is. What he's going to be rolling out is another big climate change speech. You see, because as we're getting into the summer, now the climate's changing again, Charles. So I guess the president has to pontificate on why things are hot and muggy through most of the country during this time period.
Well, you know, it's funny that you say that, because as the climatologists were always screaming at the top of their lungs, weather is not climate. And yet, through this entire quote-unquote debate, it has never been a debate. Basically, it's been an attempt to dictate from on high and basically create a false consensus and tell us what's happening rather than having scientists. It's actually the government attempting to dictate to scientists what's happening inside science. And the way they've done it is to hand out money for climate research that favors a certain viewpoint. Okay, well, basically, for years and years and years, they told us that don't pay attention to your weather because weather isn't climate. Well, when the weather all over the globe, everywhere, is cooler, then there's no global warming. There's global cooling. And there have been numerous attempts. I actually got into a thing online with a guy who wanted to tell me that all you have to do is do a simple statistical analysis on the data points. And I go, yeah, if you had all the data points, you could do that. But here are the facts. About 20 stations in Siberia have been closed. Mm-hmm. That those are temperature gathering stations. And the reasons that they're closed are obvious. It's the coldest place on Earth, below the poles, and that's Siberia. And when you take out the data points from the coldest place on Earth, what happens to your average temperature?
I think it would, like, creep up, wouldn't it?
Yeah. When I raised this objection, this person suddenly crept back into the woodwork. Because a simple statistical analysis of the data points, when a bunch of the data isn't there, is meaningless. As anyone who knows anything about data analysis knows, and maybe I'm speaking from a specialty viewpoint, but I used to do that. We would look at statistically and take averages and standard deviation and that business, but you had to have all the data points or it was meaningless. You did not want to do what they call testing quality into something. I was in a quality assurance department, so you can't test quality or you can't test a specific view about the data into it by eliminating data points. There are reasons sometimes to eliminate data points, and it is a very complex and a, shall we say, you have to be able to defend your position when you eliminate data points.
Well, if you can identify one as an outlier that's outside, so far outside the data set that it becomes problematic or inconsequential, then that's legitimate. But if you are specifically getting rid of certain data anchors that will keep you promoting your particular view of policy, then that, I think, is academic fraud.
Well, sure. Look, We're doing an article from the New York Times partly here today.
Yes.
And one also from, I think, from the Weekly Standard. All you have to do is read the commentary. Climate change is here. Blah, blah, blah. Barry, climate change has always been here.
It's always been here.
Now, I'm not talking about spring, summer, winter, fall. That's not what we're talking about on climate change.
No.
We're talking about the fact that the climate itself is always changing, and we have nothing to do with it.
No, we've not arrogated to ourselves quite yet complete godhood.
And so when you make this big deal about climate change, is it always advantageous to us? No, it's not. Ask the people who at one time lived in the Sahara forest. Because sometimes when a nice big Sirocco blows up in the Sahara Desert, the sand blows away and reveals tree stumps from trees that used to grow in the Sahara forest when the rainfall there was different. Well, the rainfall hasn't been the same there for quite some time. And the Sahara forest is now the Sahara Desert. Will it ever be the Sahara forest again? Maybe. Who knows? Because we don't understand and can't control the way the climate changes. It has to do with a number of factors, but the most important factor that everybody, except a very few brave scientists and now a growing number of scientists, forgets that the sun is the major factor in our climate.
You're absolutely right, but thankfully, none of our political heads have quite figured out how to go about shutting down the sun. And so what they do instead is they're focusing on other avenues of prohibition in order to combat, quote-unquote, climate change. And that's the reason why today's speech by the president at Georgetown University should be listened to carefully, especially by people in the Appalachian areas. Because according to one of his chief climate advisors at the White House, a gentleman by the name of Daniel Schrag, who's a geochemist who heads up Harvard University Center for the Environment, he basically says that he hoped the president's speech would mark a turning point in the national debate on climate change. And this is what he said, and I quote, "Everybody is waiting for action. The one thing the president really needs to do now is to begin the process of," now listen carefully, ladies and gentlemen, "shutting down the conventional coal plants." Yeah, I didn't stutter. That's their goal. He says, politically, the White House is hesitant to say they're having a war on coal. On the other hand, a war on coal is exactly what's needed. Now, the Appalachian portion of the country, Chuck, should be an absolute shock right now because, well, not shocked that this is a surprise to them, but shocked that they are really serious about moving forward and shutting down another source of domestic energy in the United States. I mean, first and foremost, you're going to ban new offshore drilling and lockdown permits. You're going to keep ANWR from being drilled. So now you're going to shut down coal plants in the United States. Well, Chuck, that only leaves basically two options. One is the sun, which is hilarious that they seem to be very big on solar energy, although the sun is the major source of greenhouse gases. but two, are we going to end up having to buy our energy from our enemies? That's what I think it's getting down to is, are we going to have to be so dependent upon Middle Eastern oil, and not that we're not already that very dependent upon it, but are going to be so totally dependent on it for our energy needs that we will be basically, and I use this pun intentionally, over a barrel with the Muslim countries?
Well, I have to think about it in this way. First of all, the plan is not to have us enrich Middle Eastern oil. The big plan is to force us all onto alternative energy, solar, wind, geothermal, that kind of thing. The problem is, Barry, that if anybody who's paying attention knows, you can't generate enough electricity with a set of solar panels to really get the job done. Again, you can put an array on your roof, and if you've got a really big house, you can get about maybe 4 kilowatts out of it. Well, 4 kilowatts isn't enough to run a furnace and a refrigerator and have a couple electric light bulbs on at the same time. It really is not a viable option. And people talk about how the grid runs backwards during the day when this and that and another thing happens. Well, guess what? I work at home and my air conditioner is on during the day. Believe me, my meter does not run backwards.
You wish it did.
Yeah, and it wouldn't run backwards if I had a solar array on the roof. It would still run forward. Sure, thanks to all those people who have theirs running backwards, but the fact is that that electricity is bought at the going rate, at the going wholesale rate. And that going wholesale rate is set on the basis of coal-burning power plants in this area, and not just here. It's not just Appalachia. It's also out west.
Well, that's true.
In the western states, Nevada, Utah, Colorado, Montana, Wyoming are all very much dependent upon coal-burning plants to supply. Coal-burning plants are a huge percentage of the grid. How are we going to get rid of that and keep the cost down? Well, the answer is we're not. The whole idea really is not to necessarily enrich the Middle Eastern oil barons. It's to force us to use less and less and less and less until we actually get to a, maybe perhaps even a third world usage level. That's the real goal. And that may sound paranoid, but the fact is, oh, you have to read these guys to find this stuff out. This is what they want. They want to create a two-class society, the ruling class, who, because they're so enlightened and they're so benevolent, they get to have everything they want. And the working class, who basically are, well, if you've ever read 1984, and if you haven't, you need to because of what's going on in the news these days, the proletariat, or as they were called in 1984, the proles.
Yes.
That's the kind of two-class society that these people want to create, the ruling class and the proles. And the proles basically survive on whatever the ruling class decides to give them. So it knocks out all entrepreneurialism, because how can you be entrepreneurial if you don't have access to energy, free access to energy? The answer is you can't. You have to apply for it, and you have to get grants and permits and blah, 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 blah. A society that we're rapidly building here. That's what these guys want to create. And don't kid yourself. Barack Obama has proved that that's exactly the kind of thinking that he does. I mean, when you got guys out there like Chuck Schumer that says heavy regulation is necessary so that we can stop cell phone explosions. I mean, seriously, Barry, how many cell phones have you heard of that have exploded?
None that I know of.
I've heard of one or two. And it's usually very unusual circumstances, like a battery that's defective, you know, that kind of thing. So this is the way these people think. They automatically think in terms of regulation. And what this is going to do is simply create an environmental nightmare in which the cost. In fact, folks, take a look at your electricity bill and check it against what you were paying 5 years ago, because the shutdown of coal plants has already started. There's a whole bunch of coal plants in Ohio that have already shut down. In fact, my city, Westerville, Ohio, was a partner in a coal plant because we have municipal power here, and they pulled out. And I was extremely angry that they pulled out of that thing. Well, we're going to save the earth by pulling out of a coal plant. And I'm like, no, you're not. What you're going to do is basically cause a 25% increase in my bill. And we're well on the way to that. That's what's going to happen.
Well, Chuck, I had talked recently with a gentleman who works at one of the plants. And he said, people are going to be absolutely stunned by about the end of this year, beginning of 2014, when they see their bills. He said, it's coming and there's nothing we can do to stop it. But now Obama is going to be today, later this afternoon, at Georgetown University, following up on a speech he made last week in Berlin, Germany, saying that climate change is a global threat of our time, and that basically what we're going to do is to create new regulations, new limits on carbon pollution from power plants. And he's going to use the EPA to basically create new, more restrictive standards for emissions of carbon dioxide and other, quote-unquote, heat-trapping gases that have to be in place by June of next year. And said basically they'll finalize the rules. They're going to put the rules together by June of 2014, and they'll finalize the rules by June of 2015. Ah, just in time for whoever follows Barack Obama to be running for president with this hanging over their head. So,
yeah,
you know, sometimes the law of unintended consequences balances out.
Yeah. Well, that being said, we are out of time, even though we probably need to discuss it more. But in any case, join us again tomorrow for another Principles and Policies.